Want to know how I got these scars? Well, I'm the Joker, baby.
Hello, hi. How are you? What's going on? What's new? Hey. What's up? Hey, welcome to Atomic Radio Hour, post-nuclear podcast, episode 339. How are you doing? What's going on? What's the good word? It's your boy. It's me, it's Vince. Hi, welcome to the show. I got a silly mustache, and I like to talk about Fallout. Hello, welcome. You look great as usual. I got quite the show scheduled for you today. First off, what I'd really like to talk about is I was thinking prior to recording. It's very cold here in beautiful southern Colorado, and I was taking a shower and I was thinking about the Fallout show, the series, and how it's kind of wrapping or has wrapped or something. I'm kind of hesitant to ever really talk about it. The past two or three weeks I've been talking about it because there's been these little drips and drabs that have been coming in. But that's why I'm really hesitant to talk about it. Sooner or later we'll get a trailer, you know, a trailer video will come out of me being like, ooh, and or ah, and we'll go from there. But I was thinking if the show is good enough and if it does well on its second season, hopefully we could get a spinoff show. And I don't think a Vault spinoff show. These are going to be light spoilers for Fallout on Prime. So if you haven't seen it and you're a Fallout fan, kind of crazy. It's been out like a year and I'm really surprised you haven't seen it at this point. But just a warning. You know, you kind of get that warning for like another year-ish. At least until season two is out. So, also there was like a this is why I don't want to talk about it because it's drips and drabs. There was like a minor spoiler leak thing that was like, we might be getting season two in 2026, which is a year sooner than I thought we were going to get it. But anyway, if the show is big enough and does well enough in its second season, I think one of the smartest things it could do is give us a spinoff. I think a spinoff show would be tremendous for various reasons. One of them being, I think the Fallout series works best when it shows us pre-war stuff in the show. And I say that with limited knowledge of what actual pre-war stuff is in games. In Fallout 4, we really only have the beginning of the game, and that's really it. We don't have much else. You know, you have just that. Okay, here is this. The only real thing we have is the beginning of the game where you get to see Nate and Nora's life, and then we go from there. And then there's the argument of, is that even real? Which is an argument for a completely different day. But you get to see a little bit of what that is like. Even if it's a simulation, even if it's a fake implanted memory, we get to see a little bit of that. It's coming from CIT. So we get an idea of what what the pre-war world could have looked like. And then we get to see a lot of it with Cooper Howard in the show. And there's a point, I believe it's episode 6. It's either 5 or 6. When Cooper Howard is shooting the commercial in Vault 4, you get to see a quick scene of Cooper and Bud Askins. And they have a quick conversation. And Bud Askins talks about how he was once a higher up for West Tech and then moved over to Vault Tech. And Howard is upset with him because of the flaw. I'm pointing at it on myself, but you can't see because the camera doesn't go that low. The flaw that was like right above or under, around the rib cage, that even in the last episode he exploits. And he says in episode 5 or 6, where he first meets Bud Askins for the first time, it's the same episode where they have the party, and you get to meet the guy who voices the Mr. Handy's. He says that he knew a lot of good guys that were on the front line in Alaska who died because of that. Imagine a Fallout MASH. Think about how dope that would be. Just a war story where you see people, like, you know, grounded in reality, like the show has. Show me, like, The Last of Us does it perfectly in the sense of when it's a show of, here is a world where zombies exist, but the zombies stop showing up after, like, the second episode and don't come back until, like, the last two. That's what I love about seeing the worlds I love in television form. Is like the ghouls we get to see, but we don't get to see them tremendously. But I still know they're there. We have yet to see super mutants. We haven't seen since. I don't think we're going to see since for a very, very long time if we ever do. But here's all of these things that we got to see from this game, from this series. And if you and I are Fallout fans, we know that ghouls are elsewhere. Ferals, beginning to be ferals, whatever, what have you. We know these things are there. But like, when my mom watched the show, she didn't know about any of that. So that was fun to watch her experience and go, oh, I didn't know these things were in this universe. And I was like, oh no, they're like the coolest part of the universe. And there's one that I made up who's a lawyer. And he's my favorite, and he talks his way out of things, and he has a very good friend. His name is Krogar. Whatever. We have these things to go off of. And I think if we had a war drama, and you know, you could start it off. You could start the first episode with Walton Goggins in it, giving a speech, being like, I'm so proud to be here. I served where you fellas served. Now I'm here to support you. And even though I went on to, you know, have a successful acting career, just know. And like that plays into him kind of switching sides, which is alluded to throughout the first season of the show, how at the beginning of it, at the birthday party, they're calling him a commie sympathizer. Then he goes to Moldaver's convention, her meeting, and they talk about what it means to be, I want to say proletariat, but the people there are very much people with influence, affluence, you know, to be a part of a resistance group, to be the founding starting point of it. And to see where that goes from there, to see him being full on America, full on the commies are wrong, and then see everything kind of switch, and then see it in the show switch. You don't have to show him every season. I wouldn't want to see him every season. I'd like to see him every now and again. Maybe have him shoot some, like, what is it? There's something with The Simpsons that The Simpsons has. I don't know if this is true or not. I remember hearing on a Simpsons commentary, they have parodied Citizen Kane so much that you could lay Citizen Kane frame by frame and The Simpsons frame by frame, and you could recreate the entire movie. Do that with one of Cooper Howard, like The Man and His Dog or The Man from Dead Horse. Take one of the fictional properties that he's a part of and retrofit it, shoot shots of it. And then, like, you'll just see people watching it. And eventually you'll have a feature-length film that the fans can go, oh, this is, like, a thing that has been built in the world and I can go and check out and watch. There's a thing about fandom I'd like to talk about quickly in relation to this. When I was young, a boy, a lad even, fandom was a thing that people were so proud of but kept hidden. And then when you went to cons, it kind of came out. Like once I was in an antique store, a hobby store, a thrift store, and there was a Xena the Princess Warrior binder of somebody who had collected fanzines because they were just big fans and the internet was burgeoning. It was at its beginning point. And it was a point where people made these things, and now it's just like, yeah, I bought some things off Etsy. Like hobbies are commodified. But the point I'm getting at is even like the angry video game nerd comes from this era. James Rolfe comes from this era. And I truly think if you're making YouTube videos, I've said this before, in any capacity, you're trying to be him in some way. Like that is the giant shoulder that everybody making internet content is kind of standing on, because he was the first one, in my opinion, from my perspective, to prove that you could do it. There's been people who've been technically more successful than him, but he was the first one that was like, there is something here that can be big and make money and what have you. And he did a thing that I love where he took both Kill Bill movies and re-edited them together so they're one film. There's people who took the Star Wars prequels, the ones with Anakin, and they chopped them from, you know, a 6 hour or more movie, three movies, into a three-ish hour epic. So you get to see Anakin grow into Darth Vader in one shot and not in three separate movies. That's fandom. And I feel like the Fallout fandom would come together and clip, even if it's these background shots where you get to see a TV and there's like, oh, here's a new shot of the movie and this is where I think it could be. And who knows, maybe eventually they'll release a 45-minute version on like the DVD Blu-ray. And it's the bonus feature of like The Man from Dead Horse, where you get to watch like a full feature length film. I don't think that they would do that. Fun doesn't exist anymore. But it's one of those things where If this came out 10 years ago, I could definitely see that shit happening. Maybe even 15 years ago, I could definitely see that happening. It's one of those things that I think the fandom would cling to and really, really, really appreciate. Even if there was a way in the next Fallout games or in a 76 update of like these next clips of the man from Dead Horse, you can only see in 76's update, and then do something crazy. Have that building that it was in destroyed. So you can't see it ever again. That was the one and only chance to see it. So I hope somebody made backups. Somebody has made backups. It's on the wiki. But that's what I'm getting at, is that's stuff that's going to pull people in and make them want more and more and more. And I think if we had a show that showed us the front lines of what was going on, it's cool to keep it ambiguous. Don't get me wrong. That's half the fun of fiction, is the ambiguity, because you get to kind of put things together in your mind. I just got done reading 1984, and it tells you nothing. And that's the best part about it, because I want to know so much more about what that world is like. And I'll never know, because that's the point of it. The point is the ambiguity. You're never supposed to. You don't even know if it's really 1984. Like, who does genuinely actually know? That's what I love about it. So the ambiguity is what makes something special. And I feel like the show would benefit, the series would benefit, if we just had a little taste of what else was going on pre-war. I'd love to hear what you think about this, because to me, this is an idea that would print money. If they, you know, The Walking Dead has four different spinoffs, and I don't know anybody who is watching The Walking Dead after, and this is a super spoiler, but I doubt anybody cares at this point. The comic's been done for a few years, and the show has been over. When Glenn died. Once Glenn died, I didn't feel like anybody was still watching The Walking Dead. I dipped out after that, pretty much. Life got really hard after that, I remember. So I dipped out. Not because I was done. I was just done because other stuff had happened. But let me know what you think. What do you think it would be called? Like Fallout Alaska? Fallout Alaska the Front Line? I think Fallout the Sino-American War would be perfect. But like MASH, but Fallout. Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Talk to me. The comments below. I got a fun piece of lore for you today. Before we can get to the lore, there are some people that I have to thank. Excuse me while I shift over to this side real quick so I can let these names be shown. The Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon, I have to thank. Because of you guys, the show continues to grow and get better. Also, I just got my first ever payout. You know, 6 years of doing a podcast, and I got my first ever payout from my podcasting service for having ads. And I know ads suck. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and act like they're great, but it's another form that this show could get bigger. It could get better. We could pass things around. Not like a disease, but information. Collaboration. You know, if you are on the Patreon, it's a direct contact. It's direct contact with me. Also my Twitter and on Discord, but Patreon especially is a direct contact to me. You can get to me directly. If you have any sort of ideas about how you think any of it, I have no ego when it comes to this shit. If you have any idea of how any of this could get bigger, please check out the Patreon. You don't have to give me money to talk to me. You could just reach me on Patreon. I am just appreciative of all these people that I have on screen right now, from the $1 tier to the $10 tier. I think the $10 tier is the best because you get to watch these episodes get recorded live in front of a studio audience. But these names that I have to thank, if you excuse me for a moment, I would like to read them starting from the top. I have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Willie DeWitt. Thank you to Willie DeWitt. After Willie DeWitt, I have to thank Mellow Millhouse. Thank you, Mellow Millhouse. After Mellow Millhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. After Captain Lennox, I have to thank Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to Danish Hound Dog. And last, but certainly not least, I have to thank Brotherhood Outcast. Thank you to Brotherhood Outcast. Because of these fine folks, the show continues to grow and get bigger and get better and can thrive. And I appreciate you very, very much. I love doing this every single week. Even on the harder weeks, it's fun, and I enjoy it, and I love you. Thank you. So for this week's lore, I wanted to talk about Fallout 4 again, honestly. I always give a poll on the Patreon, and this week's poll was a tie, and I wanted to just talk about Fallout 4 again. It was nice to go back and play it. It's also nice to just kind of meander in Fallout 4 and do nothing, because I feel like I've been doing that with Fallout 3 and New Vegas for such a long time. that it just feels nice to be able to go do that with Fallout 4. So when it came time to look at the poll and I saw that it was a 50-50 split, I went with the Fallout 4 option. If you'd like to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever from the Fallout series, consider checking out the Gooman Entertainment Patreon, because from the $1 tier to the $10 tier, every week I will ask a poll question and your voice will be heard and you get to choose what this week's lore is. So by way of the Gooman Entertainment Patreon, I bring to you the lore on Fort Strong from Fallout 4. Fort Strong. Fort Strong has one of the coolest missions tied to it in Fallout 4. In the quest Show No Mercy for the Brotherhood, you get to do like a Vietnam power fantasy and you just like play Fortunate Son while you mow down super mutants at Fort Strong because the Brotherhood wants control of Fort Strong. What a surprise, right? The Brotherhood wants control of something they have no right to, but they want this, and you go and you take it. You don't get a lot of XP because you're using a power weapon essentially, but it's one of the cooler missions, quests. It feels more like a mission than a quest in Fallout 4. But Fort Strong is a real place, and pre-war, it is a military base that dates as far back to the American Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And as I wrote that, which I thought was fun, I thought about the British homies. Hello, England. How are you? I thought about how I'll say the Revolutionary War, and that to them means nothing. I mean, it might mean something if I say the American Revolutionary War, because that's what it was, but it's just one of those cultural differences of, you know, I'm an American, these games are based in America, and that's... It's a divide. It's a cultural thing that I'm always interested in. If I meet anybody from any other country, I'm like immediately like, I want to know about everything about your country. And it's something that made me think about that. Now, like I said, it was a military base. It is a military base right now. It's offshore on a little island in Boston, in Massachusetts. You could go there right now. I mean, I don't know if you can get on base, but like, you know, if you're close enough, you could see it. And in the year 2075, General Brock takes over the base. I have some quotes here that I'd like to read, some terminal quotes that I got directly off of the Fallout Wiki, the Nukipedia, if you will, fallout.fandom.com. I love these games. I've played these games, but when I do this lore, I like to have a little bit of a reference point for some stuff that I may have missed. His terminal entry from June of 2075. As of today, command of Fort Strong has been passed to me. I am looking forward to help the U.S. Army test some experimental weapons systems at our facility. I've already had the men preparing the island for testing operations by tearing down the old barracks and constructing a simulated town. Since we'll be fighting the enemy on an urban front, I think the best way to test these weapons is by seeing how well they punch through civilian structures. Now, two of the biggest things that they were testing here, there was two teams for it. There was the Alpha team and the Bravo team. The Alpha team was working on T-51B power armor, the first batch of power armor that was sent out to the troops. The first batch of power armor that was given to the soldiers in China. And Team Bravo was working on the M42 Fat Man launchers. Yes, you heard that correctly. The mini nuke launchers inspired by a real life device that was made by the US military called the Davy Crockett that shot mini nukes, small nuclear projectiles at people. As of June of 2076, a year after General Brock got into Fort Strong, the first sets of power armor were being deployed to China. Again, from his terminal entry. General Brock's report, June of 2076, Alpha Team just shipped their first batch of T-51B suits to the fronts of China. Reports are already coming in that the suits are performing better than expected, chewing through enemy tanks and armor like they were paper. Word has it that some of the enemy troops are even surrendering when they catch sight of power armor troops hauling their 5mm miniguns. Looks like Alpha Team earned themselves a weekend pass in Boston. I won't say that. I'll keep it to myself. General Brock's report from December of 2076. Bravo Team is having a heck of a time getting the M42s not to shoot far enough away from its firing position. The problem is that the warhead is still too heavy to fire. the distance required. Our simulated soldiers are still soaking far too many rads and suffering blast burns. One of the technicians has suggested a radical idea of using a conventional depleting subcharge to catapult the round rapidly out of the launcher. His calculations look sound, so I'm going to go ahead and give it a try. To reference the beginning of this podcast, if you're just listening to the Lore High, there's a whole podcast that goes with this, and I recommend you check that out too. Seeing something like this developed pre-war in a spin-off MASH-style show to go with Fallout on Prime, I think would be great. I think a lot of people would appreciate seeing the birth of power armor, seeing laser weapons, laser rifles being developed, seeing the history of that, seeing the history of plasma weapons, seeing who these players are that we've only read their terminals. This is one of those things that I'm so interested in the Fallout universe, is the minutiae, the dumb shit, the smallest of the small. I want to know why you're going to say, hey, this needs to happen this way, this needs to go that way. I so very much want to know what the idea was of, let's shoot mini nukes at people. You know, at this point in time in the Fallout universe, Israel is no longer a thing. It is nuked off the map. So, you know, between Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and now this fictional Israeli bombing that has happened, there is proof of what nuclear weapons can do, and that man looked at it and go, we need to do this more, is very interesting to me, and I would like to know more about that thought process. One of General Brock's last reports is from September of 2077, arguably a month before the bombs dropped. After a few design setbacks and the loss of one of our testing squads, we finally perfected the M42 launcher's firing mechanism. Washington has been riding me to wrap this project up, but with a weapon this potent, I was inclined to take my time. We've sent the launchers ahead to the supply yard in Mississippi, and we're just waiting for the go-ahead to ship the warheads wherever they need to go. Hopefully, we can get those nukes out of here before the month is out. I don't feel comfortable sleeping 20 feet above nukes that could reduce the island to ash. Fort Strong is a very interesting place. It's something that I'm actually really surprised that Fallout 4 has fleshed out this much. I always say that Fallout 4 could have used... Fallout 4 and New Vegas are very similar in the sense of they needed about 18 months more of development. And I really like Fort Strong because of its world building. I really like the fact that Super Mutants just took it over. And as far as I found on the wiki and from what I remember on the game, there's no real reason why the Super Mutants took it over. They just take it over. And you have to go deal with that when you do the whole Fortunate Son thing, like I said, when it's like Platoon. You're there, you get rid of him, there's a behemoth, he's gone. And I think it's really, really interesting that those things have happened. The Super Mutants have taken over. And also, I just want to know more about this world that I'm so invested in. Now, there are some fun things that you can find, like a power armor frame. Some of the loot I'm going to go over quickly, that's really good. You can find the frame. You could also find all the way up to XO1 power armor. You can find 10 cannonballs if you have that cannonball launcher weapon. It comes in handy. U.S. Covert Operations Manual issue number 5 you can find in General Brock's desk. The Fort Strong key that'll get you into his desk. 3 mini nukes, which, you know, you might need. A Fat Man, which is kind of fun if you're role-playing to be like, this is one of the first Fat Men that could have ever been developed. It could have been a unique weapon, and it isn't, but it's just cool to think of like, oh, this is fun. This could have been one of the first, if not the first, to ever be developed. If some fun facts, some notes, if you approach the base before you do the mission, before you do the quest, the behemoth may not appear. If you go there and loot it before the mission as well and kill everyone and everything will respawn when you go to do the mission, which is just kind of like, you know, get 3 nukes, get 6, get 10 cannonballs, get 20. Despite Elder Maxon saying the Brotherhood will occupy the fort once it's cleared, no such Brotherhood force will ever appear. However, looking at the fort in the creation kit reveals that it was once planned to occur and it was cut content because, again, the game needed a little more extra time. Fort Strong is an interesting place. I really wish that they would have developed it a little more so you could go there and you could see anything. Like, with the Brotherhood being there, it'd be cool if they had the airport and they had Fort Strong and you just kind of figured out more about the Brotherhood that way. It'd be nice to have a little more commerce. Maybe that would be a hub for you to go buy stuff. I don't think I ever really bought anything from the Brotherhood. If I needed anything, I went to Otoro in Diamond City, or I went to Good Neighbor, but mostly Diamond City to buy something. I hope you've enjoyed that, because that has been this week's lore. Hey, everybody. Segment 3, something I want to share with you real quick. I like coming on here and talking about mental health stuff, especially because my government's trying to get rid of research for it. We're not going to get political. Don't worry about it. What I want to talk about is there was something that I saw recently that said, if you need to talk to somebody, all you need is 8 minutes to not feel alone. There was a TED Talk or something I saw a clip of, and they were talking about how scientists said, if you feel like the world is caving in on you and you need to talk to somebody, all you need is 8 minutes. That's it. The brain feels less alone after 8 minutes. And I can attest to this. If I've been having a rough day at work and no one's really talked to me, someone will come over and talk to me for a few minutes, and almost instantly I feel better. Even if it's just, you know, 3 minutes, 6 minutes even, I always feel a little bit better. And I think there's something about that number 8. It's not 10. It's not 10, and it's not 5. You know, it's more than a passing conversation, and it's not like, it's not an in-depth conversation like, oh yeah, like this happened, that happened, this happened, that happened, whatever, 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 whatever. It's like just enough time. Just like, hey man, you don't even have to talk about what's going on. I don't even think you have to talk about what's making you feel the feelings that you're feeling. It's very much, I just need someone to talk to. Like, I just want someone to talk to for 8 minutes because it makes me feel less alone. And it's one of those things where I think people need to hear things like that. It's one of those, like, I've done this before and I'll do it again in case no one's ever heard it. You could thank me later. Thank me when you're older. If you can't punch anybody in your dreams, you can throw them. Listen to me. You can pick them up and throw them. And you ever punch somebody in a dream and it feels like you're like, meh. Okay, now listen to me. Like, really put this in the back of your melon. You can't punch them in your dream, but you can throw them. You can pick them up and throw them. You're in a dream. You could do whatever the hell you want. If you could lose a dream, mazel tov. But what I'm getting at is, if you know that all you need is 8 minutes, dude, who doesn't have 8 minutes? Who can't take 8 minutes at a job? You know, no matter what you're doing, who can't step away for 8 minutes? You know, if you can step away for 15 minutes for an uninterrupted extra break for the day because you got to take a shit, trust me, if you're working at a company and you're not a high-level person, take a shit on the clock. Don't do it on your break. Don't do it on your lunch. The boss makes a dollar. You make a dime. That's why you shit on company time. Go take a shit. Like, go say, hey, man, I got to walk out. Like, at least my job has been accommodating. I don't know if I've ever talked about this openly. I have panic attacks. Who doesn't? 2025. You know, everybody's got something going on. Every now and again, I feel like, everything's wrong all of a sudden. And I'm not afraid to die, so I don't feel like I'm going to die. I don't fear death. I think fearing death is personally, I'm not saying this is you, I think it's a little silly, just because personal perspective time. We're all going to die. You know, are you afraid of, going to work? You're afraid of, you know, driving? You're afraid of taking a walk? You're afraid of eating cereal? These are all things that are going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, these are, like, it's an average day thing. So I'm not afraid of I'm not afraid of dying. So I don't get that part of the panic attack. But what's always helped me with a panic attack is if I take a few minutes and I call somebody, call a family member. I go, hey, I'm freaking the fuck out. I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes. How are you? Sometimes I'll talk about the panic attack. Sometimes I'll talk about plans I have for the future. Sometimes I'll talk about what I'm making for dinner. It's just talking helps me get through it. It's like a speed running strat, honestly. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes they're worse than others, and I gotta talk to people for more than that. I think the most I've ever had a panic attack for was a couple of days. And it's just kind of varying levels of, and you just kind of have to get through it. And that's like the main thing is, like, if you know, one, I need 8 minutes to talk to somebody, my brain will feel less alone, but also you're going to get through it at some point in time. It's always helped me. I've said this on here before and I'll say it again. It's hot sauce. And I learned this from the dude from Hot Ones, the YouTube hot wing eating show. When you take a bite of a hot wing, the hottest one they have, it sucks right then and there. And then 15 minutes from when you took that first bite, you won't even remember that you had it. And that's kind of the way I like to look at things when things get rough. All you need is 8 minutes, a person to talk to. And if you don't have someone that can answer the phone, you know, there is always someone on the internet who will talk to you in some capacity. Just try not to be destructive about it. And don't be parasocial about it. But, like, there, you will always find somebody. And who knows, man? Maybe, just maybe, one day we'll all come to realize the people we work with are closer to us than we actually imagine. And then maybe, just maybe, we can talk to them as well. I hope you've enjoyed. That has been episode 339. My name has been Vince. I hope you guys are doing well. I hope, you know, you get your 8 minutes to take a break and talk to somebody, even if you don't need it. I hope you get the time to take and to have a conversation with someone you care about. I love you guys very much. In the description below, there are links to the show's Twitter, my Twitter, Kyle's Twitter. I don't know how active we're going to be on there for very much longer, but I'm just saying it while still there. The Discord, join the Discord. Listen to how silly I am. I'm forgetting how the outro goes. I got to thank the one and only Shane Ivers. Thank you to Shane Ivers very much. Thank you, sir. His song is the intro song that should be playing right now. It's also the outro song, and it is Feather Duster. You can get all of his free music over at silvermansounds.com/free music. A bunch of heaters, all free. Also, I'd like to thank the Patreon once again. I love you guys. Links in the description, the Redbubble, the Discord, the Twitter, the Patreon. I love you. Thank you for being here. I will see you in about a week's time. I love you very much. Thank you for being here. Bye now.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
A Ghoulman Entertainment Production.